It's the Beckler and Shauna podcast, your daily download of X92.9's X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna.
Brought to you by Shane Holmes, offering affordable customization on your new home.
It's Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. I'm Beckler.
I'm Shauna.
This is the Beckler and Shauna Pisscast.
It is the pisser.
How are you now?
I'm good. How are you?
Not so bad.
Good.
Not so bad.
Good.
This is a long Pisscast because we have our very first Beckler and Shauna's Career Day segment today.
Yes.
And I think we can unveil to you now that at the end of the show, you're going to hear a decently long interview with our first Career Day guest, a fighter pilot.
Yeah.
His name's Sean Vino. He flies the CF-18 out of Cold Lake. Mm-hmm. And this was a fascinating conversation.
It was. He seems like an awesome dude, too. Yeah. So, yeah.
So we're excited about this new segment, about some of the guests that we're going to have in the weeks to come. But it is a long podcast.
So yeah.
That's at the end.
Brace yourself. Buckle in.
I'm not even going to tell you what's coming up. Other than that, let's just launch into it after today's Out of Context clip.
It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
The Beckler and Shauna Podcast.
If someone came up to you tomorrow and said, you must be on one reality TV show starting tomorrow, what would you pick?
Okay.
What do you think you'd fare best at? You could go with this different angles, right? You could go one that you'd really prefer to be on, one that maybe you think you'd fare best at. I don't know.
If I was single, I would say The Bachelor.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
You're going to put 30 of the most beautiful women you can find in front of me? Oh, no.
I have to mac on all of them at
poor
once.
Poor me.
Yeah. Go to the fantasy suite together. Ooh.
So if I was single, it'd be that.
Okay. Easy enough.
But I am happily married.
Yes.
So it won't be that.
Okay.
It will be anything kind of trivia.
Oh.
Like, I think I would do pretty well on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Interesting.
I have a lot of useless knowledge rattled around and up here.
Okay.
A lot of just stuff that's not going to do me no good in the real world.
I would do the absolute opposite. I have the memory of a goldfish. Nothing trivia wise
so
stays in my
do?
Brain. There's a couple. So one, I've always wanted to go on Amazing Race. I thought I'd fare pretty well in Amazing Race with a friend and I. In fact, we were trying to submit a while back and we just haven't gotten around to it. But
I could see you doing pretty well in Amazing Race.
Fairly resourceful, not afraid of much. I'm adventurous and try all the stuff. So I was like, that would be really fun. And then the other one, just because I thought it would be a really funny social experiment, is Love is Blind.
I hear about this all the time. I don't even know what the show's about. What's the concept?
So I've watched a couple of episodes and I can't really get into it, but I like the concept. The concept is essentially that you get to know somebody before ever seeing them physically.
Okay, I thought it was blind people.
Nope.
Am I thinking of Love on the Spectrum with autistic people? But that's
is
not
that a thing?
That's not a game show. What? I think that's just a...
Okay, that's just a show. You can't just opt to hop in on that one, I don't think.
No,
although
I can't.
Maybe.
Okay, so I was mistaken about what Love is Blind is about.
Yeah, not blind people. No, it's, you get to know somebody and they basically set you up with these and you sit in these rooms where you can't see each other, but you can talk.
Okay.
Definitely and get to know people that way. And then you eventually are revealed to them and see if love is truly blind or not.
And is there disappointment?
Not that I've seen so far, but again, I haven't gotten really, I'm sure there is. I haven't gotten too deep into it because again, it's the concept I like, but watching those shows, I'm like, cringy, but I would do it. I think it would be an interesting social experiment.
Huh.
Again, if I was single, which I'm not. If my boyfriend's listening to that, he's probably like, you're going to go on what show?
The Beckler and Shauna Podcast.
You know, it was a really weird experience for me, Shauna.
What was that?
So when my wife McKenna was in the hospital last week, many of the doctors, in fact, I might say most of the doctors who treated her were younger than me.
Well, you are old.
You are older.
By 8 months. Doesn't matter. We're in this together.
But that is a strange realization
that is crazy.
To have. Like, when you realize all these experts around you are now younger than you.
Yeah.
Like the one doctor we had was two different kinds of specialist. Like, how smart do you have to be? How much schooling do you need to be?
A
two
lot.
Different kinds. And I'm pretty sure he was younger than me. Either that or he just looked really good for his age. The resident who oversaw McKenna for much last week was 25. I'm 35.
That's insane.
It's wild.
I know. It really makes you sit here and go, what have we done with our lives? We make fart jokes and you're saving lives at 25. Jeez.
It kind of reminds me of when I first started noticing that many NHL players were younger than me. Because, you grow up looking up to these people, right? They're older than you. They're adults. They've got it all together. And then all of a sudden,
you're like, nope.
You're the adult.
Yeah.
They're younger than you.
I know.
And it's not that I don't think that they're capable. Like, I'm sure they're as smart as anybody, right? And as capable as anybody.
Yep.
And we all reach this point eventually in our lives where the experts are all younger than you.
I know. My boyfriend Cliff really put it in perspective recently. He was just like, yeah, I mean, you're at the age where most major, you know, athletes are retiring. You're like,
yeah,
right.
There's that joke online where he's like, here he comes, the oldest player in the league, 35, a miracle.
Yeah. You know, like, seriously.
That's where we're at. Yeah, we would be old dogs in a professional sports league.
Sure would. Yeah.
And
moving to management at this point. That's what we'd be doing. Yeah.
Broadcasters.
Yeah.
And I guess even not among the young guns in a hospital either. So
yeah.
So they're like, do you have any questions? I'm like, yeah. Do you remember 9/11? What was 9/11 like? You tell me. You tell me before I can trust you.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
There was an article within the New Yorker recently that was talking about how travel brings out the worst version of yourself and how people should not travel. And then they used a quote from this Portuguese writer, Fernando Pessoa, who I haven't heard of before, but he said this, I abhor new ways of life and unfamiliar places. The idea of traveling nauseates me. Travel is for those who cannot feel. Only extreme poverty of the imagination justifies having to move around to feel.
Colorful language.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Was that written satirically?
No. There's a small faction of people who, in this article they were talking about, who talk about how travel is not good. You should not travel.
I would imagine that article pissed off some people.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Geez, I can't say that I'm not a big traveler. I'm not a huge traveler, but I don't look down on it. If that's how you want to spend your time and money, great.
Yeah.
Seeing the world, it's pretty cool.
Nope. Some people are not happy of travelers, clearly.
I'm more of a homebody, but I would never judge anybody for wanting to travel.
Non-travel snobs, as they like to call them out there.
Travel snobs.
Non-travel. That's what this was all about.
Jeez. I would imagine they're probably fairly rare to see in the wild, but
they
do exist.
They do,
the non-travel snob.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I go anywhere? Where I live is simply the best place on earth, which is why I live here.
You just travel to run away from your problems. I can travel within my own brain.
I went somewhere once, and they didn't have the things I was used to. It was awful.
I don't even travel beyond my bedroom walls anymore. It's a waste of my elevated energy.
I have absolutely no desire to see unfamiliar people and smell their unfamiliar smells.
You like the different sights and smells of other places? I can smell different things by sniffing my own couch cushions.
I'm a Boston Red Sox fan. There was a post on the Boston Red Sox subreddit yesterday where someone was asking if you're allowed to bring breast milk into Fenway Park. And I'm assuming it's a nursing mother who was in there wondering if that's against stadium policy.
Interesting.
On outside liquids.
Yeah.
I would say probably almost certainly not. I don't see anywhere that's going to turn you away for that. Do you?
No.
If you hold up like a baby bottle full of breast milk.
Yeah, that would be allowed. You'd assume.
It might even be a rights violation to not allow someone in with that, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that's a genius way to smuggle in your booze, isn't it? Put it in a bottle.
If someone goes to that length.
I know.
If they mix it with breast milk. And
also, that's awful.
Let them have it.
Yeah.
Say okay, if you want to. But you kind of have to let someone in, don't you? Like, do you have breast milk in the venue? Probably not.
No.
How does the airport do it?
I don't think it's a lot. You'd have to check it if you wanted to bring.
But the baby's on the plane.
I know.
The baby's not in checked bags.
But it wouldn't be a pass because if it's over the liquid amount, I don't think you could bring it on a plane.
Really?
Yeah. Because you could hide a bomb in your breast milk. You know, that's what they're worried about there.
We'd all forget about the shoe bomber Richard Reed pretty quickly if someone made a bomb with breast milk, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
So it has to be in the jug to get in. Is that's what you're telling me?
Like in your actual physical jugs.
It can't be in the bottle.
No, in your mommy bags there. It's got to keep them in there, not in a bottle.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast. Mology with Shauna.
So I said holy moly the other day, and I was like,
holy moly.
I wonder where that comes from. There's also, you can probably guess, but I'll just get into this a little bit. There's also holy Mackinac, holy mackerel, a whole bunch of those that start with M, right?
Yeah, and does it have to do with, people not wanting to blaspheme back in the day?
That's exactly it. Okay. Similar to, you know, you say holy geez instead of Jesus because it's less blasphemous. So that's what...
But what holy man.
What I didn't realize, though, is most of these references, like holy cow or holy mackerel, are actually referencing specific religious stereotypes. Like holy cow was a reference to Hindus and holy smoke is a reference to incense burning. When it comes to holy mackerel, it's actually a reference to the fact that Catholics eat fish on Fridays.
Oh.
And that's where all this kind of came. So I never thought that. I thought people just put random words and were like, holy. I never would have thought that it was some sort of religious reference, but it was. But when it comes to holy mackerel, it dates back to almost 200 years ago. And at the time, mackerel were a very affordable fish. So, of course, a lot of people ate it. And it was actually a derogatory term back then to call Catholics mackerel snatchers. Because they ate so much mackerel, the people would be like, it's a
poor
mackerel.
Catholics.
It's mackerel if you're a Catholic. Yeah. French also has a word that developed from mackerel fish. It's maquereau, which is slang for pimp. And it's because, I guess, mackerel fish have a habit of leading other fish to their mates. So because of that, they're known as kind of matchmakers. They actually use...
The pimps of the fish world?
If they're the pimps of the fish world.
They're the pimps of the sea.
Honestly. And this comes from the Dutch term mackerel, which means madam, and is the same. It's all in reference to the pimps of the mackerel fish. So I didn't know about mackerel, but next time you have some mackerel, they're big pimps.
Etymology with Shauna.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
We got a bunch of messages from people who said, yes, you can bring breast milk onto a plane.
They will check it, but you can, which does make sense. Yeah. The more you think about it, it's like you can't really say no to that, I suppose.
No, the baby needs it to live.
Yeah. Yeah. They will test it. They will chest it. That's great. Oh, yeah.
You bet they'll chest it.
Yeah, they'll chest it. They'll test it for, you know, they'll do the bombs, swab and drugs. Stuff and that kind of thing, I guess, if you have it, which makes sense. I always thought it was very interesting because I remember one time I was in security and there was a lady with a baby and they swabbed the baby. But on
it's
the other
not a
hand,
baby, it's a bomb.
Seriously, though, I was like, this sounds awful, but if you were planning on smuggling stuff, the way to do it would be baby stuff, man.
Yeah.
So I get it. I'm like, I bet you babies get pretty scrutinized. They probably do get swabbed because...
Drug smugglers are absolutely not above using children.
No.
Yeah.
No. I look at babies all the time and I give them a side eye. I'm like, what kind of drugs you carry in there?
Yeah.
What's in your diaper? What's in your diaper?
Oh, that was a great conversation that we had with that guy who worked at security at the airport here.
Yeah.
Maybe we could track that guy down again for career day.
Love to.
But he was talking about all the different things they look for, like suspicious behavior in line and stuff.
Yeah.
And he said, like, people who are dressed very flamboyantly because they might be meeting somebody on the other side.
Interesting.
He said if there's a disturbance in line, they're on high alert for the people after, too, because sometimes they'll send someone through as, like, a decoy.
Diversion, yeah.
When the actual...
Yeah. And babies and their diapers.
And babies and breast milk.
And breast milk.
You can never let your guard down.
No.
This person said my friend was flying home with some breast milk in her bag and declared it. And the super young male customs agent was all flustered at the thought of breast milk and didn't know how to categorize it. He said, it's dairy, so animal products. Sure, mom loved that.
She
really liked that one. The Beckler and Shauna podcast is brought to you by Shane Holmes. I don't have a clever segue from breast milk.
Well, you can store your breast milk comfortably in your Shane Holmes home refrigerator, obviously. Yep.
They're building a new phase of Lane Homes in Vermilion Hill, the beautiful community where hardy board and detached double car garages come standard, or garages if you prefer. Lane Homes from the low 600s. I wonder if it's still low 600s because since I got this information from them, the prices of houses in Calgary have gone up. So
we'll see.
They're heading in one direction, it seems. Straight up. Learn more about Shane Holmes at ShaneHolmes.com. Shane Holmes!
The better way to build.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Can I admit something to you, Shauna?
Yes.
This may be unpopular, but I really do truly mean it.
I'm terrified.
No, it's not that bad, but okay. I hate the bar version of Moni Moni by Billy Idol.
I don't even know if I can picture it right now.
I bet you can. Ready?
Yeah.
So fill in the blanks here. This is Billy Idol's Moni Moni.
Here she come now, say Moni Moni.
And then you say,
hey, money, money.
Do you know that one?
No.
No?
What is it?
Hey, get laid, get is what everyone says.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I,
okay.
I hate it so much. I hate it so much. It gives me the biggest ick in the world, and it always has. I've never participated in that. I never will. I was hoping you would have filled in that line.
No,
because I didn't want to be the one to say it.
Nope.
Ugh.
Okay.
It doesn't even make sense.
Yeah. What is it supposed to mean?
I don't know. I think it, like, is it just because you get to yell some swears? Like, are we 13 years old?
I suppose so. I've got to be honest, though. I've actually never yelled that in a bar.
Wow. Every bar I've ever heard where that song has come on,
and everybody
every pub
yells
crawl,
that. Mm-hmm.
It's a staple, and it just drives me nuts.
It's just an excuse for people to swear when they normally can't swear. Yeah, let it all out at once. You
Which
know?
I think, again, is fun when you're like, when you're a child.
Yes. But
we are adults here.
True. We
has
can do that
to do
all
with
the time.
Song.
No.
Where did that come from and how did it spread?
That's a good question.
I would love to know that.
Yeah.
I think the people who really enjoy that version of Money Money are the same people that think Cards Against Humanity is the funniest thing in the world because there's bad words on it.
Okay, fair.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe I'll do a little research on this and I'll see what
I can come back with. I was going to say, we'll have to do the etymology of Money Money.
And it's not like I'm a big Billy Idol fan or anything. I'm not like trying to protect the integrity of this song.
Nope.
It's fine. It makes me cringe.
It's just cheap shots. Yeah, it's a cheap thing to do is all the swear words for fun, I guess. Yeah.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
One of our favorite songs on the station right now, Shauna, is Modern Girl by Bleachers.
Oh, hell yeah.
You and I both really love it.
The sexy saxophone in it.
The rock and roll saxophone.
The rock and roll
really
sax, our favorite thing. Mm-hmm.
Really moves that song. Yeah. Friend of the show, Marissa, messaged yesterday, though, when we were playing it, and she's like, does this sound like the Purple People Eater to you?
We both read that, and we're like, oh my God.
So here's Modern Girl by the Bleachers, if you aren't familiar. And here's Purple People Eater.
It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying Purple People Eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying Purple People Eater.
A one-eyed, one-horned, flying Purple People Eater. Sure looks strange to me.
Now, yeah. There's horns in the verse here.
When he came down to Earth and he lit in the tree, I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me.
Whoa, no.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the same, but I can hear enough.
Yes. And an overlap, a mishmash of those two songs could be pretty good.
It could be great.
I'm not going to lie. Somebody should get on that. Somebody who's much better at doing that than me.
The instrumentals.
Some DJ, bring it, okay?
The instrumentals to Bleachers.
Yeah.
With the lyrics to Purple People Eater.
The modern one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
I think close.
People eater.
Close.
It's a lot to say. It's
I think if I were Bleachers, I would, in live shows, I would mix in Purple people. Can you imagine, like you're Bleachers and you work so hard on this song and you're really excited about it and you push it out, you know, to all the radio stations everywhere and someone's like, hey, that sounds like Purple People Eater. You're like, oh, crap.
Hey, that's a good song, okay? It was.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Beckler, I passed a store on the weekend, and it is the white girl store. I've never seen anything like it. I passed it, and I stopped dead, and I was like, oh my lordy be.
Is it new?
It looks like it was fairly new. I don't go to this mall often, though, so I'm not sure.
I wonder if it's the same one I'm thinking of.
It might
be. One in the mall that I go to usually, and it's, oh man, is it white girl.
It has like crystals and plants and mountain shelves, and then all the signs,
the
signs and sayings, and right there, and I stopped, and I read them for a while. It was hilarious because there were so many good signs in the store. And I didn't want to be rude and take photos of all of them because I didn't want them to be like, why are you taking photos? So instead, I walked by it a few different times and then wrote down what the signs were.
Just like you'd walk by and commit as many to memory as you could
absolutely.
And then walk by the other way?
Yes, I did that four times. I'm not even lying to you. I had some time to kill, to be fair, as something was being made in the mall. But yes, I did do that. And I was like, oh my Lord.
If it's the store I'm thinking of, I have a photo of Bo standing in front of the wall of white girl sayings. He was like, Dad, look at this.
I remember that photo actually. That didn't look familiar, but
wow, so
maybe it's
one.
Changed. Anyway, there were three that I did write down that I wanted to pass along immediately to you. The first one, what a time to be a vibe. That was the first sign.
Yeah.
Instead of two, right?
Yeah.
Vibe. Everything about that, just phenomenal. The next one, I have a crystal for that.
I bet you do.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I bet you do.
And then the next one, keep calm and Hold a Crystal.
Wow.
So this is a new subgenre, right, of white girl sayings that we haven't actually gotten to before, but lots of them are to do with crystals now.
We've mostly focused on pizza, dogs, and wine.
Yes.
But
this is the crystals. Next step, yeah. And then there was one sign that just had a picture of a crystal, like this nice artistic picture of just a crystal, not even any statement or saying. So there you go. This is a new type.
Okay? You're going to have to pay weekly visits to the store and just see what new product they have out.
Eventually, I think I'm going to have to just fully admit, be like, okay, I'm taking photos, man. This is crazy.
The Beckler and Shauna Podcast.
We've launched this brand new segment on the show, which we're hoping is going to happen every week, called Beckler and Shauna's Career Day, where we talk to interesting people about their jobs, interesting jobs,
yes,
common jobs with different takes on it. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to start with a big one. On the phone right now is Sean Vino. Sean, what is it that you do for work?
Good morning, guys. I'm a fighter pilot in Cold Lake.
Wow. So what do you fly?
So I fly the CF-18 Hornet, and we've had this plane for about 40 years now. And it's a great aircraft, and we're really anticipating the acquisition of the F-35 here in the coming years.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions for you. If and when we get the F-35, will you be in line to fly that plane?
Yeah, absolutely. And Canada has, they've definitely committed to purchasing the F-35. And the first couple that are going to be coming off the line is going to be like 2026, looking at 2028 for the arrival here in Canada.
So how often do you get deployed then?
So that'll depend typically what squadron you're in. So we have like high readiness squadrons that are ready to deploy throughout the world. And it'll kind of rotate between the East Coast and the West Coast. So I would say once a year for an actual deployment, if the government of Canada requests us to do it. So we're also required to deploy on specific times of the day or times of the year when we have to fulfill our NORAD commitments, and that's like your Northern Aerospace Defense, and that's a bilateral agreement between the United States and Canada to defend our borders both by sea and by air. And that's kind of like a thing that was held over from the Cold War. So we've been doing that, and it's a lot of fun to see the country and to deploy on, you know, literally like a moment's notice to go somewhere and fly. You don't know where you're going until you kind of take off. So it's kind of cool.
Wow.
I want to back up a bit, Sean. In my mind, I have this idea that they only allow the most capable people behind the controls of an aircraft like that. How elite are you? Like, what is the process to end up in that seat?
I wouldn't necessarily call myself elite by any stretch. It is a very long process, though. So it'll start with, obviously, to become an officer in the forces, you have to have an undergraduate degree. And then once that's taken care of, you'll have to pass air crew selection, which is a series of tests and medicals and things like that to ensure that you can just become a pilot in general. And then you'll do about a year's worth of training in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. And that one is called Phase 2. And that one was about 150 hours of flying in a T-6 or CT-155 Harvard 2. And from there, you're selected to either become a helicopter pilot, a multi-engine pilot, or a fighter pilot. So once you're selected fighter pilot, you'll go on to more advanced training on the same aircraft. And then you'll go to a new program. I shouldn't say it's a new program. It's been around since 1982, but Canada is sending all of their jet candidates to the Euro-NATO Joint Jet Pilot Program in Texas, which is something that I did back in 2019. Then you'll fly the T-38. It's a bucket list plane for me personally, because the NASA astronauts flew it back in like the 60s, and they still fly them today for training. So it's a pretty cool twin engine supersonic jet. You'll kind of get the basis of flying jets and stuff there. And then after that, you'll return to Canada and you'll do about a year long course on the Hornet specifically for employment as a fighter pilot.
Wow.
So what percentage would you say like apply, actually get through to be a fighter pilot?
I'd say it's about 0.5%. And I don't want to like steer away, like, you know, people listening to this morning to go and try it. My wife, you know, we were sitting on the balcony in Phoenix on vacation, you know, 8-9 years ago. And she's like, what have you always wanted to do? I'm like, I wanted to be a fighter pilot, but I think I'm just going to go ahead with this like airline pilot thing. She's like, go for it. I'm like, hun, you have to understand, like, one does not simply become a fighter pilot. So, you know, there's just, it was just a lot of tests and a lot of tests. And out of my class of 17 on phase two, two of us were selected jets.
Wow.
We continued on with our training. We went to Texas. Unfortunately, one of us, well, not myself, but the other individual, did not continue through with jet training. And then we came to, Cold Lake here in Alberta and did the CF-18 course. And we had, unfortunately, two people fail off that course as well. So, I mean, if you just did the math, it's, yeah, it is kind of rare, but
that's unbelievable.
What are they looking for in terms of aptitude? Like, what are the physical requirements? What do the tests look like to get in?
Yeah, absolutely. So, a lot of it has to do with like spatial awareness and multitasking capabilities when it comes to the aircrew selection process. The medical is pretty simple. Again, not a recruiter, but, you know, you used to have 20/20 vision when I enrolled in the military 20 years ago. Now it's not the case. You can have corrected vision. You can wear glasses while flying. You can wear contacts. So that was one massive hurdle for a lot of individuals, was having that 20/20 vision. So the medical just, it's pretty basic, I'd say, honestly, in terms of that. But for being a fighter pilot, it comes down to systems management, weapon systems management, and multitasking capabilities while flying a plane and doing the things we do.
What would you say is the hardest part then? What is the biggest obstacle to get above and beyond then?
Yeah, I'd say definitely the ability to multitask and not forget how to fly the plane. I know that sounds very simple, but when it comes down to just flying the plane fast, trying to fly in formation as a wingman with your flight lead, and then also simultaneously like working your weapon systems to make sure that you're targeting the right things and you're going to drop the bomb on the right thing, or you're going to shoot a missile at the right thing. It comes down to that multitasking and not breaking down on some of your cross checks.
Interesting.
What does it feel like to fly that plane, Sean? Like, what does it feel like to have that kind of power at your controls?
Yeah, I can tell you, like, the first time I did a takeoff, it was just about a year and a half ago for the Hornet, and it was awesome. And it was in the winter. So, you know, density altitude is nice and low, and we just kicked it right into afterburner on takeoff, and it just kind of like pushed me back in my seat a little bit. It was a really cool experience. Now I kind of feel it a little bit. It's kind of like normal. And I hate to say that, but, every so often I'm just, you know, on takeoff, I'm like, oh yeah, that feels good. You know,
you talk about being deployed and, you know, but once a year, and then you do some NORAD stuff as well. But what are the non-flying responsibilities that you have to do day to day?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great question. And I think that's a lot of thing that, a lot of times is overlooked as being an officer in the Canadian Armed Forces. We have our responsibility as officers to make sure that we professionally develop for command at higher levels, regardless of whether you're doing pilot-centric command things or other command level positions. And then there's also the pilot specific stuff that, you know, even the airline folks would understand. You have to do your annual exams on the aircraft, your annual instrument rating exams and seat checks for us to make sure that our gear is satisfactory and that we still know how to, you know, correctly inspect our ejection seat and just things like that.
Have you ever had a chance to do any of the, like the ceremonial duties, like the flyovers at big events or anything?
No, I have not done a flyover yet. Not in the Hornet. I did in the Hawk, which is one of the jet trainers that we have here in Canada. While I was waiting for training on the Hornet, we did a Remembrance Day flypast in Kamloops, and that was a really cool experience.
What do you think is the biggest thing that the public may not know about your job?
I've never really thought about that too much.
Because I think I didn't mean to cut you off. I think everybody has their conception of what a fighter pilot does, and I'm sure that's heavily influenced by, you know, media, but what do you see that most people don't?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'd say it comes down to a lot of the stuff that we have to do behind the scenes. So, you know, you look at YouTube or, you know, you type in fighter pilot and you see a bunch of cool pictures of people flying around, going fast, doing stuff. But really it comes down to, for every 1 hour of flying, I'm pretty much doing 7 hours of legwork behind the scenes. So that could be like 2 hours of mission preparation study for the event that I'm about to do, an hour and a half to brief the mission or be briefed by a flight lead for that mission, execute the mission for an hour to 2 hours. I mean, it can go longer than that if with air-to-air refueling and such, but typically 1 to 2 hours. And then we'll do typically a 2-hour debrief afterward on what went well, what went wrong, and how can we improve it to make sure we don't make those mistakes in the future? Because it's just really costly, and it takes so much time to get us here that we have to make sure that we're squeezing the lemon like super hard.
Are you at the, excuse me, this is probably a dumb question, but are you at the base like 5 days a week doing other things?
Yeah.
And you're, is it a lot of paperwork and stuff as well, or?
Yeah, I'd say that comes down to like the mission preparation. So right. Making sure that you have all your mission cards ready and things like that. But then there's also the administration of just, you know, being at work, you know, when you want to take vacation, you got to put in some administration and paperwork for that kind of stuff. So yeah, we're at work typically 5 days a week. I wouldn't say it's like a 9-to-5 per se. Like my hours are very fluid.
Okay.
But we try to make the best of it when we can.
Again, might be a dumb question, but can the Hornet land on aircraft carriers? And have you ever done that?
It can land on an aircraft carrier. It's actually a U.S. Navy aircraft originally that Canada purchased. And I have not landed on an aircraft carrier. We don't have aircraft carriers in Canada.
Yeah.
We do have the capability of practicing it in the sim for fun. That said, we still do have the tail hook, and we are required to use the tail hook at least once in training to make sure that we can safely bring the aircraft to a quick stop on a runway. So, for example, here in Cold Lake, we have several runways, and they all have cables, so that way, in the event of an emergency, like an engine fire or an engine failure or something else that requires us to like stop immediately and exit the aircraft, we are able to put the tail hook down, take a trap, and get out of the aircraft.
What kind of weapons have you used?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a bunch of bombs in the arsenal, I suppose, that we have dropped here. So I've dropped GPS-guided bombs, laser-guided bombs, laser-guided training rounds. The aircraft is equipped with a 20-millimeter cannon, so I've shot the gun both in the air and on ground targets. And then I've also had the opportunity within like the first 3 months of being on squadron to shoot a missile out in Comox. So that was pretty cool. So we had like an old war stock of weapons that we really wouldn't use anymore, and we just got to be able to shoot these missiles off and just get that experience of that missile coming off the rail and seeing something actually fly out from the aircraft.
Wow.
So that was a really cool experience. Yeah.
Crazy.
So often astronauts have been selected from fighter pilots. Have you ever thought about taking a stab with the Canadian Space Agency?
I think it'd be a really cool opportunity to go to space. Absolutely. I mean, like you said, like the two current astronauts that are in the system right now, if you will, with the Canadian Space Agency, both fighter pilots, or two of the four current astronauts are fighter pilots. They both came through here in Cold Lake. Well, obviously, Chris Hadfield, everyone knows him. He's an ex-fighter pilot as well. So, yeah. I definitely would love to be an astronaut to take the opportunity to fly to space.
Is it hard to keep aware, like spatially aware, when you're flying at super high speeds? Like, especially if you're that close to other aircraft, like I can't even conceptualize how difficult that might be. Like, is it confusing? Is it disorienting?
You know, I wouldn't say it's necessarily disorienting. Everything is like relative movement. So I would say it's like driving down the highway next to a car. If you're going, you know, 110 down the 2 and you're driving next to someone, but they're not moving in relation to you, it feels like you're not really moving, except that you're going forward at 110. Right. Now if you start accelerating or decelerating, then you're moving relative to that car. And that's kind of what formation flying, like close formation flying, would be like I don't really notice the speed that we're flying at.
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed the relative movements of myself to the individual I'm flying formation off of, unless we're of course about to transit through a cloud, in which case, you know, speed gets really real because you can see the clouds pretty much stationary and you're ripping by it. But
you don't have to answer this question personally, Sean, but for someone who is thinking about, you know, going down the same career path you've gone down, what is the salary range for a fighter pilot in the Canadian Forces?
Yeah, so actually, that's a great question. And it is public knowledge. It's on the Canada.ca website. So you can go there and take a look at all the different pay incentives. There's a new pay level for pilots that just came out in the last 2 or 3 years. And effectively what it is there's a 20 different pay scale incentive levels per year for captain specifically, which is the rank I'm currently at.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think about a couple years in training, and then you, if you really wanted to stay as a captain and fly for your entire career, you can do that and still make upwards of $180,000 a year at the peak.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, of course, you can get promoted to like higher command levels and get paid more for that additional responsibility.
And for somebody looking to, again, maybe get into this, what would the first steps, what would your
recommendation
be?
Yeah, I would definitely fire up the computer and take a look at the Force's website to get more information on application processes, some information on what it is to be a pilot in the Canadian Forces, let alone a fighter pilot. And if you're really interested in doing the fighter pilot route, I would recommend taking a look at YouTube and really getting yourself fired up, because it's a long training haul. There are going to be long, hard nights. You will fail, and it's how you deal with that failure in training that'll make you a better individual on the other side.
You mentioned the F-35 when we first started chatting. What is the outlook for the future for your position? Is the Canadian Armed Forces going to need fighter pilots for many years to come?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the F-35, it's if I'm not mistaken, I think it's an 88 aircraft commitment, which is going to require a lot of fighter pilots to fly those aircraft over the next. I'm not sure exactly what the lifespan of the F-35 will be for Canada. I'm going to say maybe 25 to 30 years, speculation, of course. And we're going to need people to fly them. So it's a really exciting time if you're listening to this and you're like super young and you're ready to get in. It's a cool time ahead, because you're going to get some pretty fancy new equipment. Kind of like I wish I would have, joined the military in 1982 when we got the first Hornet. I mean, that would have been cool to fly the Hornet for its entire life form. It's a great jet. The F-35 is very capable as well. So,
well, Sean Vino is a fighter pilot with the Royal Canadian Air Force. Sean, thank you so much for answering
our
questions.
Thanks so much, Sean. That's awesome.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for having me on this morning. I really appreciated that.
You've been listening to the Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Brought to you by Shane Holmes, offering affordable customization on your new home.
You want more? Then tune in to X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna live on Calgary's Alternative, X92.9. Monday through Friday, 6 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time at x92.9.ca. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and have Beckler and Shauna downloaded daily to whatever device you use. Later.
After Hours with Mariah and Ty, a weekly podcast that brings this dynamic duo to another level of awesome and allows you to listen on your own terms. Go behind the curtain and hear the stuff you won't hear on the radio. Like, they're going to say,
find After Hours with Mariah and Ty wherever you get your podcasts.